So you've got this guy who's been pro se all this time, most likely had horrible representation at trial and on appeal, and now he only has us. He's got one of the biggest firms in the state behind him, right? So, I mean, for him, it's like, wow, okay, I finally have the support I want. I finally have somebody listening to me after all this time. So they get this whole big representation group team behind them, and it really does kind of give them a sense of, okay, maybe we'll get through this, and maybe this will be okay.
I am so excited to bring you this episode from the 10th floor of a tall hotel in downtown Philadelphia. If you can hear some background noise, that's the wind blowing in my window. Chicago, I believe you have some competition for the title Windy City. Before I get started with the episode, some major thank yous are in order. First, to the Pennsylvania Innocence Project for being amazing and accommodating and for all of their hard work. Also, to TJ from Pints and Puzzles podcast for helping me by giving me some hotel points, making this trip even possible. Also, to Dina from Twisted Philly podcast for taking me to dinner and giving me my first taste, literally, of Philly and making me feel comfortable here. I also wanted to give a shout out to the Hilton Garden Inn City Center in Philadelphia. If you're ever in the area, I strongly recommend this place. They were so polite, attentive, and just fantastic. As promised, this episode is the start of the new format in which we talk about an innocent network agency and then after that share the stories of exonerees from that agency. I'm going to begin to tell you about the amazingness that is the Pennsylvania Innocence Project, but first I need to give you a little bit more exciting news. This episode has three sponsors. That means next month I'll be able to go to another Innocence Network agency and most likely make my car payment. Today's sponsors are some of my favorites. My newest sponsors are Spring, an online shopping company. Wait until you see my new boots. And
Simply Safe Security.
And also Blue Apron. I'm going to need your support on social media and the pod cook-off. Just remember, supporting our sponsors supports us and shows them that Actual Innocence is a podcast worth supporting. If you can't financially support a sponsor, that's okay. But if you could please give them a thank you shout out on social media for their support, I would really appreciate it. Let's talk about the sponsor Spring first, and these gorgeous boots. Check my social media for pictures. When I was first approached by Spring, I wanted to make sure that I truly supported them before selecting them as a sponsor. And I was amazed at how easy their online shopping platform is and the quality of the brands, and I was able to discover all that from the comfort of my recliner and my pajamas in my living room. Spring is a digital shopping destination for over 1,500 brands for fashion, beauty, and lifestyle needs in one place. Not having to visit multiple stores is definitely a bonus for me. Some of the brands you might find include Origins, Smashbox, and Tory Burch, and a lot more. So basically, you can find all of your must-haves at shopspring.com with free shipping and returns, plus no minimum to ship. To access the amazingness that is Spring, you just need to download the Spring app in the App Store or visit shopspring.com and use my code, ACTUAL, to get a discount. So download the Spring app in the App Store or go to shopspring.com right now to start saving on all the latest fashion and lifestyle trends. Get free shipping and free returns on your Spring purchases with no spending minimums. As an added bonus, use my code ACTUAL at checkout to take 20% off your first purchase. You can see the website for more details. That's shopspring.com or shop through the Spring app and use the code ACTUAL. I drove into Philadelphia on Sunday night from Indiana, so it was about a 12-hour journey. When I passed the Pennsylvania border, I thought, perfect, I'm almost there. If you've ever made that journey, you know I was not almost there. It's a very large state. A very large state with one Innocence Network agency to help all of the innocent people incarcerated in its borders. I had convinced myself on the first morning that I was going to walk from the Pennsylvania Innocence Project from my hotel. It was just under a mile, and I wanted to get a feel for the city. Then I walked outside and was hit by wind and rain and promptly walked back inside and got a car. When I got to the building, I needed to make my way to the third floor of the Temple University building where the project was located. On the bottom floor, where I entered, was a person sitting behind a desk who asked for my ID. This is important. I'm going to come back to it in a later episode. I entered the elevator on my way up to the third floor, knowing that my hair was frizzed and my shirt was wet, and not knowing what to expect. So here's where I need to make a confession. Here's a short clip from my team meeting from the night before. I have to admit that I was slightly terrified when I came here because I called Marissa and Marissa was like, yeah, I had to check you out before I let you come. You know, I totally understand, but it was just that I was intimidated by her because she was obviously assertive, and so I was slightly intimidated. I entered a door immediately to my left that had a sign on it that said Pennsylvania Innocence Project, and then a smaller sign underneath that directed people to another room if they needed any other kind of assistance. I learned later that the project was frequently confused for a copy room. I walked in the door and up to a friendly-looking woman behind the desk in the center of the room. I simply said, "Hi, I'm Brooke. I'm here to see Marissa." In that instance, all of my anxiety went away and was erased by an overwhelming feeling of welcome and support. I'm almost ashamed to admit that I had been scared just moments earlier. Yvonne, who we will talk with in just a bit, the office manager, let Marissa know I was there, and she immediately came to greet me. She even said the words, "She's not here to see me. She's here to see all of us." I tend not to describe women by their physical characteristics because I'm short, and I think that skews my perception. Plus, I don't notice things like hair color or jewelry. But what I noticed when I first met Marissa was that she carried herself as a person with confidence and passion for what she was doing. I feel like I've been talking a lot. Don't worry, the interviews are coming shortly. Marissa invited me into her office and let me know right away, which I totally appreciated, that in Pennsylvania, everyone has to know that they are being recorded and consent to that, which is a pretty important fact if you're a podcaster. We then, after checking with everyone about the recording, went on a tour of the office.
So this is kind of our main room. This is where a lot of the students are working, as you can see. So they've all got access to the computers. This is also our reception area. Yvonne is our office manager. She handles all the intake and deals with people who walk in the door looking to make copies.
She was very friendly when I walked in the door.
Well, she was expecting you.
She's not friendly to everybody.
She's the kind of front line for the project. So Yvonne handles all the letters that come in for the first time. Yvonne is essentially the intake screener to make sure that people meet the criteria that we have, which, of course, is after claiming actual innocence. They were convicted here in Pennsylvania, and they're beyond their appeals process. So that's the point where we get in, and Yvonne does that initial screening before sending it on. She also kind of oversees all the files to make sure that everything's where it's supposed to be and that everybody's getting their work done on time. So we have six interns in here today from a variety of schools. We've got Villanova, Temple undergrad, Temple law. So it's very often kind of a mix around. And if you want to come around the corner, sure. I'll show you where the conference room is.
The room had about four computers lined up against the far wall. Yvonne's workstation was in the middle of the room, and then on the other side of her area were six or eight computers back-to-back on a table, with students diligently working on them. We then exited the room and passed back through where I had gotten off the elevator to enter the conference room.
Yeah, we're a little bit spread out.
Take a look.
This is our conference room. This also is the area where student interns can come in. We have six computer screens in here as well as a large conference table. This is also where we keep all of our files for a variety of what we call stages, stage two, three, or four. And back there we have where the supplies are, of course. We have this set up because we have an office in Pittsburgh, and so when we have all staff meetings, we'll Skype in
that's awesome.
Pittsburgh attorney so that she's kind of here.
Right, exactly.
Although today she has the flu, so she
you have a lot of technology. Do you get like a grant for that, or is it just
Temple donated?
Awesome.
All of the computers, and they help us to upkeep them. The office furniture actually was all donated by a law firm that was
that's
changing
nice.
Locations. So we got you know, this really ornate conference table and all the chairs and things, and we just kind of, you know, make do with what we have.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
To be able to fit the fit it out. So during the summer, when we have full-time interns, student interns, this room is filled with students. And then on Wednesdays, we have interns from Temple Law School, Villanova Law School, and Drexel Law School. And they're usually in here for what we call the academic portion of their clinical, because they have to get some kind of academic component for the American Bar Association to be able to get credit as an externship program or clinical program. So we generally do that all together. It's interesting because it's the only course we know of where the different campuses come together
right,
for a particular school. And they really love it because they get a different feel for what it's like at different schools and kind of compare notes a little bit. There are four law schools just around Philadelphia. There's Villanova, Temple, and Drexel, and Penn are here in the city. We also draw from Rutgers and Widener as volunteer students. So on any given day, you'll see students from all, you know, kind of different campuses. And then out in Pittsburgh, there are two law schools. There's Duquesne University School of Law and the University of Pittsburgh, and they also have the same kind of cooperative agreement at the clinical program. So it's, we really pride ourselves on trying to work with lots of different law schools.
Are you a highly sought?
It is. We are usually filled on our clinical programs. We don't screen out. We just get whoever applies to it. But yes, there's usually a waiting list to get in, which is great.
Yeah, that is great.
The room was as large as I would picture a typical conference room, with a beautiful table. Several computers lined a wall, and there was also a wall of files. We then walked back through the big room I had entered in the first place, and down a short hallway that had several office doors on one side, and a large glass wall on the other. We passed a large copy machine, obviously operational, so you'll hear a bit of it in the background.
And just down here we have our staff offices. So Neil is our senior staff attorney. I have the legal director position, TC you've met. He's the staff attorney. Bill Babcock is our development director. He won't be in today, I don't think. And this is Richard. He doesn't know he's been recorded yet.
We stopped recording as I was introduced to Mr. Glazier, because he hadn't been there when the recording announcement was made. I found out, though, that not only is he the executive director for the Pennsylvania Innocence Project, but he does that pro bono. We will definitely hear more from him later. It was decided that I would be set up in Zach's office at the end of the hall. Zach's the investigator, and he was out investigating. Okay. Before we get more audio from the people at the project, I want to talk to you about my other sponsors.
Thousands of people seeking home security get ripped off every day, and the home security industry wants you to believe it's your only option. They've got hordes of salesmen out there trying to scare you into signing one of their long-term contracts. You get stuck writing huge checks, month after month, with no way out. It's robbery by contract. And it can cost you thousands. But there's a better way. You can protect your home with SimpliSafe Security. SimpliSafe has no contracts. None. You'll get award-winning 24/7 protection, named best in the industry. Security professionals watching, ready to instantly send the police. And it's just $14.99 per month. That's less than half of what most companies charge. Protect your home the smart way. Visit SimpliSafe.com, that's SimpliSafe.com/innocence to check out their new high-definition camera. Plus, you can get 10% off of any order, but that's only at SimpliSafe.com/innocence. So go now to SimpliSafe.com/innocence.
Like I said, I'm editing this episode in a hotel room on Tuesday night, and I'm trying to determine the best way to share information with you. Re-listening right now to the interview audio, I know that we have to start by talking with Marissa. She's incredible, intelligent, passionate, articulate, and did I mention amazing? I've also come to a realization that we're going to have to do this episode in two parts. But let's begin with Marissa and I nestled in Zach's office talking about what exactly the Pennsylvania Innocence Project is.
I'm Marissa Boyers-Bluestein. I'm the legal director for the program, and I've been with us since the very founding, since April 2009. I was the first staff person that was hired in order to run it. Although hired is kind of loose because Richard Glazer is our executive director, but he's pro bono. So Richard had retired from the legal profession and decided this was something he wanted to do with his kind of spare time. So he's been the executive director since we started. I've been the legal director since we've started. And that was in April 2009. So it was Richard, myself, and Yvonne Carter, our office manager, from day one.
We talked not so briefly about Marissa's journey to the project, which I promise I will share with you in the next episode, and then talked more about the project's development.
So April 2009.
Yeah.
So there's two of you.
There's two of us.
So what happens next?
We kind of looked at each other like, well, we got 400 letters in.
Oh, wow.
You know, as executive director, Richard has been really about making sure we have the money to do what we need to do, development, you know, getting our board together, getting the kind of more systemic internal support for the organization. But it was really up to Yvonne and I to kind of, all right, how are we going to set this up? What are we going to do? And so for she and I worked together, you know, during that first year to kind of say, okay, here's how we're going to flow cases. Here's how we're going to make a decision to move it forward increment by increment. Because we wanted to make sure we don't miss anybody, number one. I mean, that's the most important thing. But number two, we want to make sure that we're only representing people who are actually innocent, or at least as much as we can possibly be assured of that. So that's what we did. We came up with a filing system. We came up with a way to screen cases and ask for more information as we move along, and you know what the criteria should be and how we should do this and outreach and all that stuff Yvonne and I really did together from the very, so everything that is around here today, you know, these five offices that are down the hallway in the conference room, is all because Yvonne and I started this, you know, back in April 2009, and we put in place this system that seems to be working.
So what is your system?
We start out at a very low threshold, because again, we don't want to miss anybody. Mm-hmm. So there are three criteria. Are you saying you're actually innocent? You weren't there. You didn't have anything to do with the incident that led to your arrest. Were you convicted in Pennsylvania? We're not barred anywhere else, right? We're only here in Pennsylvania. And are you past the direct appeals process? Because in Pennsylvania, you have a right to counsel at trial. You have a right to counsel on what we call your direct appeal, your first appeal, where you're looking at legal issues that happened during your trial. If that's unsuccessful, you have a right to counsel on your first post-conviction petition. So our PCR, we call it PCRA, Post-Conviction Relief Act. And if you have the right to an attorney, there's no need for us to use our very, very limited resources to work on that case, because that could be successful. So we look at after that process is done. So those are really the first three criteria. If they get through that,
what percent do you think make it through?
About 50%.
Okay.
So, you know, we'll receive about 600 letters a year. 300 will go through kind of to the next stage. Because a lot of those letters are, I need advice on my RAP contract or on my divorce, or there's just a lot of, there are not a lot of lawyers out there who take letters from convicted individuals. So we get a lot of those letters, and that's fine. We're happy to screen through those. So then they go to what we call stage two. And at stage two, we send out a 12-page questionnaire, which we developed with folks who work with convicted individuals regularly, as well as some former inmates, to get the language right, to get the kind of understand, so they would understand everything and know what we're looking for. So it's about 12 pages. It's asking for information about their case. You know, was there identification? Was there forensic science? Was there a confession? Was there informant testimony? What kind of evidence do you think exists to prove your innocence? Why do you say you're innocent? You know, where are the documents? Stuff like that. And then we ask them also for what we call their appellate briefs for the direct appeal. So an appellate brief is just a legal written argument put forth by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which is the prosecution, or the defense counsel. And we ask for the court opinion. And the reason I do that, and I want the court opinion in particular, is because that opinion will go through the facts of the case in a light most favorable to the state. Right? So they're going to put in the strongest case the Commonwealth had. And I want to know if, even looking at the strongest case, I can still see a potential for innocence, then that's a case I want to look at. Right? So sometimes some of the convicted individuals we deal with will say, oh, I don't know why you want that. It was all a conspiracy. I'm like, okay, you know what? I think we're good. I don't think I need to hear anything further from you, but thank you for writing to us and trusting us. And then, so that information, the questionnaire, the appeals, and the opinion get reviewed by one of the folks you just saw out in our main room by a law student. And you know, that could be a first-year volunteer, second-year volunteer, could sometimes be an attorney. We have a lot of retired attorneys who come in and do those reviews for us.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's great. and they'll review it. And we have a form for them to fill out to kind of summarize the case and make a recommendation to move forward or not. The case then goes to either T.C. Tansky, our staff attorney, or Neelam Sungby, our senior staff attorney. They review it. If they think it should move forward, then it moves forward. If they think it should close, then it comes to me, and I review it again, just to make sure. And we don't want to leave anyone behind. So if it moves forward to stage three, then at that point, the law interns come involved. So we get clinical or extern or practicum students from different universities, different law schools around the Commonwealth. And those students are with us anywhere from 10 to 12 hours a week. And their assignment is to take one of these stage three cases, get every single piece of paper they can get on the case and review it and determine, is this a case we think is appropriate for the Pennsylvania Innocence Project to take on? That's their job. So if it's a case from Western Pennsylvania, then the kids in the Pittsburgh office review it. If it's from, like, Harrisburg East, then the folks in the Philadelphia office review it. And that's what they do. And in Pennsylvania, it's incredibly difficult to do that. I mean, that sounds easy, right? Oh, just read the paperwork. You can't get it in Pennsylvania. Many times we'll go to the court, the file's missing, incomplete. You know, they can't find it. We'll write to the district attorney and we'll say, can you send us information? No, we're not going to do that. They don't have to. There's no requirement.
There's no checks or balances or anything.
No. Some states have a FOIA or a Freedom of Information Act, sometimes called a right to know law. We call it a right to know law, which allows anybody to get information created by the government to review. Most states, an inmate or convicted individual can get the police file or the district attorney's file or some information about their case. Not in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
We have an exclusion for anything to do with a criminal investigation. Literally, the only thing we can get is coroner's reports through the right to know. So we can't go that route. Wow. We're not entitled to discovery in a post-conviction, even after we file a petition. So getting that information can be very tricky and very hard.
Wow.
So we do the best we can with what we have, and that's the students' jobs. So they'll work with us directly about that. And then if it's a case we think we want to pursue, they produce what we call an investigative report. And that's basically a 20 to 30 page document summarizing the file. And we're very, very clear with them. We said, look, this is not an advocacy piece. You're not writing a brief. You are not advocating for this individual. You are putting together a report. Good facts, bad facts, neutral, everything goes in here. Because that report then goes to what we call case review committee. And that's a committee of at least three lawyers who've had extensive criminal justice experience. I personally prefer to have at least two of them have been prosecutors, so we get kind of that jaundiced eye, if you will, about a case. And then we present the case to them, and they decide. And those are lawyers who generally are not associated with the project. Sometimes they're board members, but often just people I know in the community. And they hear it. And the students will present the case to the committee and answer any questions the committee has. And the committee decides. Yes, you can move forward this. No, you can't. I want you to talk to this witness, then get back to us. Whatever they say, we do. And if they approve it, then it moves into what we call stage four. And that's where we can actually start investigating and looking into the case. We have a staff investigator, and that's when he gets involved, is putting together at stage four. So it is a very long process.
That's what I was going to say. It seems very thorough. How long would you say the average vetting of a potential client takes?
I'd say on an early 3 years.
Wow.
More average, probably 5 to 6. And that's just before we can start investigating.
What percentage do you think of the letters that you get make it all the way through to the final review?
I can talk about it more in terms of drop-off at each stage.
Okay.
So, you know, at first stage, like I said, it's about 50%. At stage two, it's probably about 60% we don't follow through with, 40% we do. And at stage three, it's probably 30% we don't follow up with, 70% we do. And then at stage four, it's really all about what facts are out there and what evidence exists. I mean, in Pennsylvania, as in most states, you have to have some new evidence that wasn't available at the time of trial. The reason we don't do any investigation until stage four, I mean, arguably, we could go through a lot more cases if we start investigating earlier. But in Pennsylvania, if you come up with new evidence of innocence of a convicted individual, a witness comes forward, a true perpetrator confesses, that convicted individual has 60 days to file that petition in court. 60 days from the time the claim could have been presented. Right, so we don't want to start investigating a case and uncover evidence for a case unless we are sure about it and we really want to put our name on it. That's why we have the case review committee. And the reason I set that up is because I was concerned that I would be too close to the cases by the time it got to that stage and we really needed to make a decision. Do we go forward or not? And I didn't want my bias, and I don't mean that in terms of prejudice or anything bad, but my own personal bias, my favoritism of the client, a potential client, to color that decision. I really wanted an objective, you know, checklist, if you will, on us and on our own viewpoints of this. That's why really we have that. And so, and it gives us legitimacy when we go to the district attorneys. We can say, look, you know, these former U.S. attorneys reviewed this and they think there's something questionable here. Let's talk about this. So it gives us, you know, a little more assurance that the cases we're taking on are the ones that we should be taking on. I only have one investigator. I have a huge state to cover. Right? I only have three attorneys. I've got a huge state. I can't, you know, afford to be pursuing cases that really are not ones that are appropriate for our organization. So it is long. It is extensive. And I know that it's very frustrating on the side of the folks that we work with. But this is what we have to deal with because we're so small and we're the only ones who are doing this in the Commonwealth. So it's
in Pennsylvania, are you the only Innocence Network agency? Yeah,
that's right. Pennsylvania, we have 67 counties and, you know, so 67 different ways of doing things. It's a very unusual jurisdiction to work in because of the county system. So there's a lot of independence of the counties from one another. So there's no overarching oversight on law enforcement or really on anything, so we have to kind of make inroads in each county as we go. It's a pretty interesting state to work in.
I think that your process is amazing. Like, thinking about it just right now, I feel overwhelmed for you. But I think that you put such a great process into place that it really helps, like, streamline.
Well, I keep telling my students and the lawyers, if you think we can do it better, let's do it differently. They're like, nope, this is working fine. Let's keep doing it. So, but we're always open to tweaking it if we need to. Because we want to make sure we're getting to cases as quickly as we can, sure, but we want to make sure those cases are the right cases.
So on average, how many cases are you working on at a time?
Well, it kind of depends on which stage. So we have probably about 40 cases in investigation right now, so active investigation. I think we have 19 or 20 that are in litigation. So once we come up with the evidence of innocence, if we think it's enough to win in court, then we'll file the petition on behalf of the client in whichever court they were convicted in the 67 counties we cover. We will also engage pro bono counsel at that point, usually from one of the larger firms in Pittsburgh or Philadelphia or Allentown, because they have the resources to really litigate these cases well and invest in them and make sure that we're doing everything the right way. And they also have the local connections that we may or may not have. You know, I mean, so I've practiced my entire career in Philadelphia. I don't have great ties in Elk County, right, or Fayette County. So we're looking for a local counsel who does have that. And also the firms love it because they get involved in these cases. They really dig into them. And it's a long-term commitment from them, but it is a wonderful partnership that we have. So we'll work with Dwayne Morris or Morgan Lewis or Deckert or Pepper Hamilton or Cozen O'Connor, which are some of the bigger firms in the state, or Reed Smith or Buchanan Ingersoll. And we'll get a whole team of lawyers, right? So you've got this guy who's been pro se all this time, most likely had horrible representation at trial and on appeal, and now he only has us. He's got one of the biggest firms in the state behind him, right? So I mean, for him, it's like, wow, okay, I finally have the support I want. I finally have somebody listening to me after all this time. So they get this whole big representation group team behind them, and it really does kind of give them a sense of, okay, maybe we'll get through this and maybe this will be okay. So it's, but it's all part of that process.
Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country, with a mission to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, they're reducing food waste. Not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference, so it's important to know where your food comes from. So I'm currently couch surfing with my friend Heidi from the Unsolved podcast, and she's actually in the kitchen right now creating a Blue Apron meal. She was telling me that it's easier and cheaper for her and her family to use Blue Apron, and they love trying foods that they wouldn't have tried otherwise. I love that I get to choose from a variety of new recipes each week and that the recipes aren't repeated within a year, so I'm never bored. And there's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/actual. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/actual. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Also, you'll want to visit my webpage, www.actualinpod/blue, to vote in the pod cook-off. Some of your favorite crime podcasts are having a Blue Apron cooking competition, and I'm going to need your support. So once again, actualinpod.com/blue.
After listening to Marissa talk about the beginnings of the project and the other two original staff members, the most appropriate way to continue this story felt like it would be hearing from those people. Yvonne, the office manager, has an infectious laugh, and I really enjoyed talking to her. I can tell that she is the right person in the right position because she is both polite and professional.
My name is Yvonne Carter, and I am the office manager for the Pennsylvania Innocence Project. So I do kind of two parts. On the legal side, I do all the intake for everyone who sends in letters or people who call. My son is innocent. My husband didn't do it. Can you help? So I do all the screening for everything that comes in just to make sure they meet our criteria, and then also support the attorneys in getting letters out. And then I also help on the business side, the monetary side, which is doing a lot of help with our fundraisers and all the donations that come in, keeping track of those and entering those in the database. So I kind of wear two different hats.
I've heard your name mentioned a lot today. I interviewed Marissa, and she said that back in the day that it started out with two people.
Just literally us. And it was like a three-room schoolhouse. It literally was like three rooms. It was Marissa's office, Richard's office, and open area where I sat in the students. So it was like a three-room schoolhouse.
So what was your first day like?
My first day was, it was interesting. Like, it was just Marissa and I were like two puppies wet behind the ear. We like, right. Didn't know, we, you know, it was just kind of like, because this didn't exist before. So, I mean, I came from, because she's an attorney, mm-hmm. and I also came from a law firm in the city. So we knew the law part, but just how do we figure this out? You know, because we already had people who were writing letters to, so I worked at Pepper Hamilton. So the president of Innocence Project was a senior attorney at Pepper Hamilton, who was my boss. That's how I got this job.
Awesome.
So letters were already coming into Pepper. So it was like we already started with all these letters, and it was like, okay, what do we do with them?
Right.
So we kind of had to just like jump in, you know, read the letters, and then set up a filing system, set up a database. So
yeah, she said, yeah. She made it sound like that you guys, you know, were an integral part of making the system.
It was really like, okay, how do you want to file? Do you want to start 1, 2, 3? And she's like, no, let's start with this way. Let's do it with the year. I mean, so just something that's setting up the numbers that go in the files. Mm-hmm. How are we going to do that? So, yeah, it was kind of a lot of as we go along. And then when I said, maybe this didn't work, let's try this. Oh, this didn't work, let's try it this way. So it was kind of cool because it was no blueprint. So we got to make it work and make it work for us.
Right.
So
you said that you you worked at a law firm before. I think I read that you were a paralegal. Is that...
Yeah.
What led you to that kind of work?
I've always been interested in law, and I always thought I wanted to be an attorney. And someone just said, this paralegal. I had no idea. Oh, let me look up paralegal. So I was like, oh, this is interesting. I can try this. I can go to school. And I have to do the whole law school and all the schooling. And if I can get into a firm, I can see if I want to be an attorney. And if I don't, you know, kind of see what it is. So I did that route. Once I got into a law firm, I knew I didn't want to be an attorney.
I seriously considered Yvonne's words because I think about the law field all the time.
I like law, but I also knew that I wanted the life, and seeing with the new associates, I knew that it wasn't for me. So, but I still knew I wanted to be in some form of law and, you know, to still work in this field, but not be an attorney.
So you're like the first line of defense. On a weekly basis, how many people do you think that make first contact with you?
On a weekly basis, I can get up, some days I can get 10, 20 calls.
Wow.
And then, you know, and letters, I can get 10, 15 letters a day.
Wow.
So it's a lot, yes.
And is it ever, like, I can see it being, like, emotionally difficult when there's people you
very
want to help, but
much.
They don't fit the criteria?
Yes, very, very much. It's really emotional. So it's kind of hard when the phone calls are more emotional because you hear the person, you know, the mother, my son is in jail and he didn't do it, or you know, to hear the wife, my husband's in jail, and then... And the grandmoms are, oh, so sad. Because, you know, they call them, grandmom, call this number. And she doesn't know what's going on. She just knows her grandson's in jail. She doesn't have money to get an attorney. And she you know, he got screwed. He didn't do, of course, no one ever did it. In the beginning, you have to just take them at their word. And then she's crying on the phone. And it's been times I had to put people on hold and, like, get myself together. Mm-hmm. And then get back on the phone. And, you know, it's hard. And especially when they're not in the stage we can help them at. And I tell them on the phone, well, they just got... The really, really bad ones are the ones that just got convicted. You know, he got convicted last week, and their whole world, they don't know what to do. My son just got life, you know, and I just, somebody gave me this number, and I'm calling, and I had to tell them, you know, we can't help them until they get to the appeals. Yeah, and they don't know what an appeal is, and I'm like, well, your son should know. He has an attorney, tell him to work with. So those are really, really hard, because they have no idea, you know, about the law, and they just know that they paid their, put their house up on the market to pay for this attorney to do this, and he did nothing, and they have no money, they know what to do. So those are really, really difficult. And it's a long process, you know. They hear about, oh, I just read you got Dante out, but Dante wrote us in 2009, so they don't see that part, you know. And they always say, well, you just got this guy out, my case is just like this. Yeah, but it took 4 or 5 years, and they don't understand that part. So that's so I try to be as open as I can, and, you know, not give them false hope.
On day 2, while I was waiting for an interview with another attorney, I was sitting in the large room with the interns, and I heard such a call be made. Yvonne was polite, but let the person know that they didn't meet the criteria. I really admire her ability to be so professional and so kind with all the different types of calls she handles. Richard has an office in the corner between Zach, the investigator, and Bill Babcock, the director of development. He was friendly and inviting, and I was really thankful that he made the time to talk to someone like me. Several times I heard police sirens in the background while talking with Richard, so you're probably going to hear them as well.
I'm Richard Glazer. I'm the executive director of the Pennsylvania Innocence Project, and have been so since the project began in April 2009. I think the important thing to realize, and I've thought about this because I will be leaving shortly, is the impertinence we had to think that we could start a nonprofit in 2008, one of the worst possible times for financial strength of people that would typically be donors to us. And we wouldn't have been able to do that but for Temple Law School hosting us and a local benefactor named Jerry Lenfest, who gave us challenge grant of $200,000. So from there, we started off at Temple in a small office, and we didn't have offices. We just had desks in the middle of a room, and it was Yvonne and Marissa, and I hired Marissa, probably one of the best things that I can take credit for, and also Yvonne. I hired Yvonne as well. So,
So what was your path that led you to create this nonprofit?
Well, I'm not going to take credit for creating it. There were two co-founders, David Richman and David Rudofsky, two attorneys in town. And you've probably heard the story up to this point about the large New York Innocence Project, which is the main project and heads up the network. Had been to Philadelphia for maybe 10 years before 2008, encouraging and urging the start of a new project here in Pennsylvania, because they were receiving all the letters and applications from inmates in Pennsylvania, of which there were and still are close to 50,000. So they felt that an Innocence Project was necessary in Pennsylvania, and had spoken to lawyers over the years. And it was only when these confluence of circumstances with Temple and Lenfest happened. And I was part of a working group that kind of tried to put it together, and they needed someone as a point person, someone who would kind of oversee it. And I threw my hat in the ring as an interim, and 8 years later, it's been a real joy. So for me, I served 32 years at Cozen O'Connor, large law firm, national law firm, one of the top 100 in the United States. When I started there in 1971, I was the fourth lawyer. Now there are over 600. So I left about 12 years ago and was looking for things that I could do that would be meaningful. And I started off working for a managing director of the city of Philadelphia, then became chair of the first board of ethics. And then this project came along, and even though I wasn't a criminal lawyer, hadn't done criminal work, I felt that I had some management administrative skills, and they were happy to have them.
And Marissa introduced you as the pro bono executive director.
Right. I'm hopeful that that's not the adjective that's left with me, and that all our accomplishments also will demonstrate what's happened over the last 8 years. But yes, I've not taken any compensation for the time I've worked here.
That's amazing.
Well, I mean, I'm lucky to be able to do it.
So what are your responsibilities? What do you do?
So just to kind of give you a little context, executive directors the term can mean lots of different things, and it can mean different things in the nonprofit world and in the Innocence Network world. But in our particular case, Marissa's been the legal director, and I've kind of overseen, been the steady hand at the tiller, been involved with personnel and hiring and finance and a lot of development, although we do have a development director, Bill Babcock, but overseeing that. So essentially being the person administrating everything and seeing that things get done and are in place.
I talked to Marissa yesterday about, and I'd never heard this before, how she works with the police captain or the police to improve their techniques. And I just think that that's really incredible.
You've probably looked at our mission statement online, and it's a four-pronged mission. One of them, of course, is to do what we can to prevent future wrongful convictions, mistakes. And that mission is very much associated with trying to convince law enforcement, judges, lawyers, the public, et cetera, that there are mistakes, and the mistakes can be reduced by certain procedures, certain eyewitness identification improvements, some forensic evidence scrutiny that has been accepted as gospel for decades, including arson, including how fires start and how fires behave, and all the various subjective things that go into some of the forensic evidence, the pattern evidence that experts get up on the stand and say definitively that this relates to this when it's just simply not true.
On the next Actual Innocence, you'll hear more from Richard, Yvonne, and Marissa, along with attorneys, students, and other pertinent people from the Pennsylvania Innocence Project. I'm also excited that I'm going to share with you how they work with the local law enforcement to help promote better procedures to reduce the number of wrongful convictions. Before Sarah reads the credits, I want to invite you to visit the Pennsylvania Innocence Project's homepage, innocenceprojectpa.org, and check out the stories of their clients and ways that you might be able to help them out. I also want to thank someone else. You. Yes, you with the earbuds in. Thank you for giving me the confidence, courage, and support to continue with this show. So until next time, I'm Brooke. Thanks for listening.
Hey guys, Sarah the volunteer here. And if you want to help us and Brooke, but mostly Brooke, duh, kill it at this podcasting thing, we need all the help and engagement we can get. Visit our website, www.actualinpod.com, to check out our calendar, ways to support the show. The Actual Innocence Podcast is hosted and produced and edited and magic wanded by Brooke Giddings, and she gets by with a little teeny bit of help from her and the most amazing volunteer team ever. Just picture a gif in your head that's like a dinosaur saying ever, because that's like the extent of it, of the ever part. And Megan Delaney, Casey Sanders, and Sarah Nelson, guys, that's me. We are super excited to have and appreciative of our super cool transcription team from down under, Tori Lynch and Jane Ashton. And I hope I said their names right, given that I'm not from down under, I'm from more like up over. And if you want to go the extra mile, sponsor the sponsors that sponsor us, so they'll keep sponsoring us and we can keep asking you to sponsor them, and I can make this run-on sentence more confusing. And who are our sponsors? A large and awkwardly bulky swath of gratitude for making this week possible goes out to Spring, Sherry's Berries, and Blue Apron. Our executive producer is Dennis Robinson. Our theme song is by Andy Cohen. And until next time, listen, learn, and advocate for justice. Thanks for listening.
You know what's great? Going to a game. You know what's not great? Parking at a game. With Uber, you can turn event parking into a non-event. Just install the Uber app. Enter your destination, confirm your location, and within minutes, a car will pick you up. I know, right? With upfront fares, you can know the price before you go. And you pay with the Uber app so you can save your cash for the souvenir shop. So make tonight a fun night. Install the Uber app now and take your first ride today. Uber, the better way to get there.